This is...
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Politrix.
Politrix.
Eitan, welcome to Wow, What a Week. Hashtag Politrix. The return. Baba. What a week. The president in court trying to pause his own impeachment. Parliament's big police report leaked before it's even finished. The Thursday marches are now a calendar item, and Trump is bombing Iran while your petrol price takes cover. It's Politrix, and Botsang is back like he never left. Amen. Where are you from? Where are you from?
Yeah, fresh morning to the followers, the viewers, and apologies for being absent for the last 2 weeks.
Two weeks.
It's 2 weeks. I never thought it would be that long. I had quite a number of things to deal with, among others, a very serious injury.
Yes.
And thanks for coming to see me.
An injury, what injury?
Yeah, no, I was badly injured. I'm recovering very well.
Okay.
At least I could wear shoes now since last week.
Are you comfortable to talk about your injury, or should we walk away?
But there's nothing much to hide. But look, it was an accident. I fell in the house. Actually, it was just after our last episode, that evening when I got home.
Okay.
It was early evening, around 5, 6. And I just tripped on the stairs.
So for the record, you fell alone of your own accord.
Yes.
So we don't need a commission of inquiry.
No. There's no commission. There's no sinister motives or whatever. It was a normal accident.
Sure.
And it could have been bad, but, you know, luckily I had my phone with me. I couldn't actually stand up and walk. And I had to call a neighbor, and I was near the door. So I could travel and push the door open, and he came, took me to hospital. And they checked me out of hospital around 3 a.m.
You know, yeah.
Because I was refusing to take, I accepted the morphine because I was in severe pain.
Yes.
But all other things, painkillers.
Yeah, no, Botsang doesn't do pharmaceuticals, by the way,
yes.
Just so you know. So yeah.
If I can avoid.
Yeah. But you're on the mend, so that's good.
No, I'm good, my brother. I'm back on my feet. And you know, you should have seen the... It's actually overwhelming and soothing, actually, to see how the viewers and followers of this show will say, hey, what's going on here? There's no show this morning and all that. And it's, I really appreciate it.
Sure. Let's jump straight into Ad Hoc versus Madlanga. Two investigations into the same rot. And this week, the parliamentary one leaked, looking suspiciously toothless, to say the least. Who's protecting who here?
Fresh, you know, it is very disappointing. First, let me confirm to you and the viewers and followers that the leaked document, Umkhonto is a party MP. Confirmed in one of the radio stations during the week that actually that document that was leaked, because he was being interviewed on one of the radio stations' afternoon drive show. And he confirmed on the day it was leaked that actually, no, the leaked document is accurate, it's correct. It's not fake, but it is a preliminary report, subject to finalization.
So the draft preliminary report makes no adverse findings against implicated individuals, including suspended Minister Mthunu, and MPs themselves complained that inputs were ignored.
Mm-hmm.
And Chair Lekhanyane calls talk of anyone being cleared is premature.
It's premature, yes.
Let's talk about that.
Look, Fresh, you know what is disappointing for me? It's that, you remember the beginning of these two dual processes, because they are running concurrently, the Madlanga Commission and the Ad Hoc Committee. I've always said the Madlanga Commission, it's a quasi-judicial process. It's not a full judicial process because it's a commission. It's not judges going to make decisions that are binding. It's recommendations to the head of state. While the Ad Hoc Committee, I've always said, it has more teeth. They are in a better position to can bite and chew because they are a creature of stature. They are an Ad Hoc Committee of the National Assembly, of Parliament. They are lawmakers. So it is very disappointing that even if this report is preliminary, of the adult committee, even if it's preliminary, even if they were, it may be changed in future. The fact that they release a preliminary report contrary to what Madlanga Commission is showing us.
Sure.
Remember, Madlanga Commission is the very first commission we have had in this country that has its own investigative unit. That's why they can gather information and they can even recommend arrests, you know, immediately and all that. And we have seen it happening. Now, this process has been running concurrently. We have, let me use simple examples. How on earth you know, based on the information and evidence you have at hand, you found people like Julius Mkhwanazi of Ekurhuleni Metro Police not to be guilty of anything. Preliminary. I accept it's preliminary. When there's actually already findings from Madlanga Commission, already court processes, Julius Mkhwanazi is facing, at least where we are, two very serious cases. And remember, this investigation, it was not to certain aspects. It was overall general rot within the police and PA and judicial system. That is the directive. Now, for them to come with a report and say, Prima, I think they're testing waters. I think it's politician testing how the public is going to react if they found nobody guilty. And also, remember, there's also another element. Some of the people sitting in that committee are being implicated in some of these police. Julius Maleba, I don't say they are guilty. There's allegations, there's implications, there's linked to some of these alleged criminals like Khan and others. It's not only Julius, the Adams family, both the husband and the wife. And a number of people who are sitting in parliament, names have popped up. And that's why when Julius Mkhwanazi, when he said these things on the 6th of July last year, he said some of the people who are having connections with the criminal cartels are members of parliament. Now, what does it say to me? They're protecting each other. And as I listened to the controversy, a party spokesperson saying, it's only them. They're not part of that preliminary report. They opposed it. They didn't want it to be released because it is not a reflection of what they have recommended. Maybe that's where your statement comes from that says some party members are saying their inputs were not taken into consideration.
Yes.
I will find it very hard that with all the evidence that was before us and not at Madlanga, even at that place. For example, the evidence against Paul O'Sullivan. That nobody's guilty of not doing anything. Paul O'Sullivan is clear in front of many of us that he interfered with state processes. He misled the police and IPED. But he also pretended to be working for IPED. Already that's a criminal offense on its own. You know, when you impersonate yourself to be a police person or a state official and you are not one, that on its own, it's a criminal offense to impersonate. Now, how can a preliminary report or a draft report of the ad hoc committee comes and say none of those people so far based on... And why are they wasting time to be preliminary? Why are you wasting time to release a draft and you don't go and you polish your document? You see, using these words concurrently, draft and preliminary, it's a problem. A preliminary report means actually we have done our work. We are halfway or three-quarter way. We will issue the final report after. It does not mean a draft. Now, the fact that they then included a draft there and then it got leaked, who leaked it? It's only them who could leak it. And when this is another part that I'm missing, maybe you can help me, Fresh. When the MPs or members of that committee are saying their inputs were not taken into consideration, can't they, who's responsible for drafting? It's them. The lawyers, the secretaries, the clerk, they write what those MPs tell them.
Yes.
And input, when you write a report, you know, some of us who have been in the public service for long, the old school of writing report, you have to cater for what each and every committee member had said, even if they are not agreeing.
Okay.
And then at the conclusion, I call it the old style of writing minutes. You know, in the old school days, you used to say, Mr. X said ABCDE. Then Mr. DNC opposed Mr. X, and therefore a majority decision was taken because of DNC.
Yes.
It shows and paints a picture of who said what and who opposed what. And that's the best way of writing reports, because then it protects everybody.
Mm.
It protects everybody who was in that committee.
Everyone's
opinion
hurt.
Is there.
Yes.
Everybody's hurt, even if they don't agree, even if the conclusion will agree. But for me, it's very disturbing that with damning information in front of us coming out of the Madlanga Commission, and the MPs, I don't say they should have copied what happened at Madlanga, but because you can't have one a government process saying Fresh stole cattle, and here is evidence, and then the court charges Fresh for stealing cattle. Another one comes and say, we did not have enough information that Fresh stole cattle. I mean, where did you go? It's both government processes. They can borrow and exchange information.
Yes.
And also based on many of the things that happened at Madlanga, they were not only based on material evidence that was presented. They were also based on the questioning, the probing, and you know, leading the witnesses to can confess to some of the wrongdoings. That's what the process entails. An investigative process does not rely on saying, I have material evidence only. It also takes into consideration self-confessions.
Mm.
The other thing that this committee is disturbing on, and you can say, failures. You know, a lot of people are not aware that Mr. Vusimusiket Matlala, the alleged kingpin of this whole thing, has not yet appeared before the Madlanga Commission.
Mm.
But they appeared before the ad hoc committee. Mm. So they are actually at an advantage.
Yes.
Because the man was there.
Mm.
And as they're not being questioned by evidence leader and the three, chairpersons or commissioners, being questioned round after round by all, how many are they? About how many members of that committee? Almost 20.
Was it 20 or 30? I can't remember.
Yeah.
You
remember? Mm. Almost, let's say, plus minus 20 people questioning you over and over. They are at a better advantage than Madlanga Commission. Madlanga Commission is meeting with experts. I must give credit to those MPs, because these are lawyers, these are experts, these are former policemen, these are advocates, these are former judges. There, please, you find people with metric questioning a smart criminal. Mm. And that's why also it is very important that in future when we elect people who go into offices, we must elect people also on capabilities, not on popularity of politics, because this has exposed actually our MPs that they are not at par with the citizens they are leading.
Mm.
I mean, I'm not taking anything away, and I don't say people who don't have academic qualifications cannot reason or think. I'm not saying that. I'm simply saying it is very important to have people who are going to be dealing with legal and judicial
people issues. Are up to the task.
Oh, exactly. So unfortunately, the democratic system that we follow in forming parliament and government does not put that as a prerequisite.
Yes.
But I am happy, and I've seen the ANC, which is still the leading party in South Africa, has started that process in the local government, you know, a candidate.
Of setting a bar.
Of setting a bar. You know, and I think we should extend that to even the national parliament.
Absolutely.
Because then we'll have the correct people in the national parliament who will know what, who will understand that they are lawmakers.
Mm.
And that's one thing that's lacking. The MPs in South Africa, the majority of them, I think they are there for political positions. I think they don't realize that they are lawmakers. They are there to make the laws of the country.
Sure.
And change them and amend them and all that. But no, they're just dragging their feet.
In fact, was it not Linus Breitenbach of the DA about a month or a month and a half ago? I don't know if they were fighting over the Ntate Shope being in one of the committees.
Yes.
And she was talking about we need members who are beyond reproach.
Yes. Yes.
In these committees. And we asked the question, surely set the bar at the door of parliament.
Yes.
Not at the door of committees.
Committees, exactly.
Because if everyone who walks into parliament is beyond reproach, then you don't have to have little skirmishes about committees. Because you know that everyone has passed some sort of vetting and bar that's been set.
And the vetting that I personally think, like you said, it should be at the entrance. It should be at elections. It should be at the IEC.
Not into the rooms.
Not
at the entrance of the house.
Exactly. At the end of the day, the people who will come into this house, and that's why it's called a house. Mm. You understand? And I think that's where the problem is. As a nation, I'm looking forward to a situation whereby we will come to a point where people are elected into office based on their expertise, ethics, you know, as well as whatever is morally generated people or what. And should we achieve that point, we'll go very far as a nation. Absolutely. Only that point will open great doors of being led by ethical people, people who know what they are doing, and people who are committed to that and don't take political office as a career.
Sure. Meanwhile, the Madlanga Commission has already handed President Ramaphosa two interim reports, referred matters for criminal prosecution, and been extended to 16 November.
Yeah. The way things are going there, I wonder if they will. I think they're going to try and push to complete by 16 November to also look credible fresh. You know, Madlanga Commission has received, you know, applause from many people in the country. I think they've done well if we compare them with any other commission we've ever had. I wish, and I think they will push to finish by end of November. My only concern is, fresh, they have been gotten out of the police. The focus has been in the police service, both at local government like EMPD, Joburg Metro, Tshwane Metro. You remember there was appearance of officials from Tshwane. They haven't done the KwaZulu-Natal metros like the Thekwini, Western Cape. We know that some of the issues of drug trafficking and drug dealing, they impacted on the Western Cape as well. Madlanga Commission hasn't gone there. They've dealt with the top brass police, and I think they've done very well. Actually, more and more we are realizing this was a turf war between the police mainly, and criminals or alleged criminals took advantage of the turf war.
Yes.
And the turf war, it was not only regarding drug cartels and drug trafficking. It then extended. I get it, they were now infiltrated because police were also fighting for drugs. Now these people who are criminals, they realize that, no, man, these people are easily being infiltrated. Let us even infiltrate their administration. That's why they managed to... It's not one tender of Tembisa that is being questioned. There's quite a number of tenders.
Yes.
And the conduct of the blue light. So the biggest problem started with the police. And they lived large. They lived large. We all know that, and I'm one of the people who have been protecting certain police service to say, we are a crime-ridden country, and the South African Police Service do not earn what I think they deserve to be earning, looking at the volume of work and the danger. They are not well paid. I mean, if you find teachers, nurses, and other, you know, civil servants, any modern policemen, what are we saying to our men and women in blue? That breeds corruption, maladministration, because they need to supplement their income. But now when this crime is being done by the high-earning top officials, like brigadier, not even brigadier, generals, it's all greed. And you remember the other time we spoke about, and I said I'm very much concerned that the police commissioner, the suspended police commissioner, General Fanny Masemola, is being charged for the not adhering to the PFMA. And I've been saying, how on earth, yes, is the chief accounting officer, but the chief financial officer who reports to him, who is now the acting commissioner, has been left out of this. You know, there were reports this week, and that emanates from some of the information from Madlanga Commission, that there's now pressure that the former CFO, who's now the acting commissioner, just forgot Medefni's name, must be questioned as well regarding this whole thing. So generally, you know, in a township language, ba pimpana.
Yes.
They're exposing each other. This week is this one, this week it's another one, some retired ones and so forth. But I pray that the Madlanga Commission, because I'm expecting more fresh, the Madlanga Commission must not wrap up this job because they're rush time and they're rush budget. I want to know when General Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi was talking about the NPA and the judiciary. What were we talking about there? Because it cannot be that the police, and I'll use Kat Matlala's example. Vusimuzi Kat Matlala had about 18 cases. Some were struck off the roll, some he was released, some they never reached the judiciary, they ended up at the NPA. It cannot be. It cannot be that when it's at the NPA level or in court level, then we want to blame the police. We can't. Because once a matter reaches the prosecuting level and the judiciary level, it means the cops have done their job. And then the judge or the magistrate must decide. And I'm using allegations about Kat Matlala. And these are not even allegations. These are facts that those cases were before the court. I'm using that as an example. How many of such cases didn't we know about? Or we have to go to the bottom of this corruption within the judicial prosecuting system. And I mean, we are in which month? We'll be disturbed by elections. We are in almost mid-July.
Yeah, we're about 100 days away. About 105 days away.
About 3 months. And I hope within these 3 months, the Madlanga Commission will be able to penetrate and to go to the board. Look, they will not do everything. There's no time. But at least once things are exposed, we will be able, as a nation. Because we may be sitting with prosecutors and magistrates and judges who are conniving with criminals. We don't want those people in the system. The same way we are cleaning the police, we must clean all others.
There must be a parallel process.
Exactly.
What are your thoughts on some of the happenings go Madlanga this week? The issue with Karim, allegations of seen out and about in Cape Town despite sick note, and I think his lawyer had the impression that he's in hospital or something to that effect.
It should never be an impression; it should be a fact. If I'm your lawyer and you make me go,
but I'm your lawyer, but you haven't told me your movements.
Yeah, but it should not just be impression. It should be, look, at the beginning when Mr. Karim was hospitalized, I did not know that it was in Cape Town until this week. The lawyer at some stage said him and the attorney, the SC and the attorney and the family were there. They engaged with the doctors, they engaged with him. So if he confirms that clearly he was in hospital. But I don't know what's wrong with, I don't know how do criminals think. Sometimes we give them too much credit. If it is true.
Alleged criminals.
Yes, the alleged criminals. If it is true that he was seen with entourages and shopping at, again, Woolies, it's on the picture. I don't know what it's free advertising for Woolies. Because
first no, man, I think there, I think second, Woolies are catching smoke for nothing. Woolies have a good product.
Yes, yeah, so...
And most people cannot resist going to Woolies because they make good, they have good products. That's
and,
all.
And somebody said to me, like, but why Woolies? Somebody said to me, because you can't afford Woolies, they can afford, and they've got better taste than you because their product is good.
Absolutely.
Anyway,
it's just that Woolies at a marketing level are not as brazen as, say, a Nando's.
Like Nando's, yes, so they're not brazen.
So a Nando's would have easily run with it. You know what I mean?
I would have done the same.
But I can imagine that Woolies don't appreciate the smoke they're catching. Though it's easy to spin as we are so irresistible, everyone comes here.
Yeah. You just gave them a line. But I think they don't want to be seen as, being involved or accommodative to the alleged criminals and cutters. But look, Fresh, if this is true, and I have no... And having have observed senior counsel advocate Arthur Chuckleson, is it Arthur, ne? Work over the years. When he goes in front of the mic or cameras, he speaks with authority, speaks with somebody who has material evidence. And to say they are going to get CCTV cameras, I hope they get them. They've now subpoenaed the doctor as well as the hospital. Now, I don't think that doctor or that hospital will want to ruin their careers and risk their business as a hospital by defending lies. The hospital cannot say you were in the hospital on the day you were not there.
Oh, yes.
When the CCTV footage, also when the CCTV footage of other places. Let's say yours, you deleted it. There could be CCTV footage of the shopping mall. And it could, there could be individuals, the so-called whistleblowers, who took a picture of Mr. Karim in a supermarket or in a mall or any other place. But if he did that, and if this is true, I can tell you, he will be very stupid to can do this after you have convinced the, a commission that
That they were convinced, it's just they didn't have any, they didn't have a choice but to accept the
medical the reports, the position, and all.
But also, if I'm sick, it doesn't mean I can't chew. Why can't I go out and eat?
Well, there's a difference between I'm sick and I'm hospitalized.
But I can be discharged and then want to go.
If you are discharged, it's about just processes. I've been in trouble at work with that. That I was once sick and booked off, and colleagues came to see me. And obviously, there'll be a party. People will be drinking and all that. And then my boss got to know. And he charged me to say, you were sick, but you hosted a party. I did not. My argument was, I did not. And who said when I'm booked off sick, I can't go and sit in the garden with friends who are coming to check on me? But if he was discharged, he still, or his lawyers, they still had the responsibility to inform the commission so that they can reschedule the date. Remember, the date was postponed. They were still looking for a new date, but they could not set a date because he was hospitalized.
Yeah, but the whistleblowers beat us to the punch. We were going to actually say he's fine now.
Fresh, we'll hear next week when...
But also, and I don't know if it's a placebo effect or how it works, but I know people that will be sick and they'll go to the doctor. But the minute they leave the doctor's place, already you almost feel better, even before starting your medication.
Yes.
That's why the people who will never do an online consultation, because there's something that makes you feel better about having gone
physical,
in to see the doctor.
Yeah.
How do we know he didn't feel better when he left the doctor?
But also not even protecting Mr. Kasim.
Karim.
Also not protecting him. I don't understand the medically unfitness that people talk about. And I'm not talking about this case generally. If you can leave your house to go to a doctor, who said on the way back from the doctor or after a day or two, I can't walk to the supermarket to get bread.
That's my point.
Or to get fresh air, because some doctors will tell you, don't stay in the bed, don't stay in the house, go outside, take walks, depending on the nature of your sickness. Now, if your reports came and said you were bedridden, you were incapable of even moving, it's a different ball game. That's why Justice Malanga has been saying he is not going to accept the standard medical note. Remember, the doctor doesn't have to disclose why you are sick. But it's going to be very difficult for them to force doctors to disclose the nature of the injury or the illness of their patient.
But it's a subpoena. You must come and explain yourself.
Look, they do that, but the doctor can say, but I've called the South African Medical Council that is saying I can't. You understand? Just like lawyers have client and legal prerogative. You can't force them absolutely unless they've got evidence and they doubt.
Yes.
But we'll see next week when Mr. Advocate Chuckleson's alleged CCTV footage comes in the hospital. I doubt if the hospital would lie unless the hospital know that you are in bed and you just stood up, took off your clothes and walked out without the hospital discharging you. Then the hospital can say, as far as we're concerned, this person was never discharged.
Yes.
And that's where the CCTV footage comes in. But I find it very difficult to think that Karim, at his level of life as a businessman and all that, he will do such stupid errors. You know, like, saying I'm in the hospital when you are not, and you are the center of focus of the country, you'll be very naive to can do that, to can take that risk.
But also, you need to remember that people on medical parole that we were told are on their deathbeds, but they're not out and about. Miracles happen.
I don't want to believe in miracles.
Oh, you don't believe in miracles. You're not Whitney Houston.
No.
Let's talk immigration.
Hey, talking of miracles, sorry for disrupting. As I was driving to the studio, I was listening to one show. Did you know that there is a pill to not cure, to alleviate, a pill for heartbreak?
Are you serious?
Yes.
I thought the pill for heartbreak is another relationship.
Just what I thought. There's a pill in pharmacies, they say, at a section of homeopath.
Mm.
It doesn't cure heartbreak. I don't know what it does. I don't take pills. We didn't know. If I should have known about these pills years back, I would have taken the whole lot.
I was going to say, what cured your series of heartaches?
You go to another one, then you forgot the old one. So I disrupted you. I was thinking about you when I was listening to that story. Not to say you have been heartbroken.
Yeah. No, but
so
I have.
Fresh will like this topic.
No, I've been heartbroken, but my approach to most things in life is based on my dad's teachings. That the sooner you can accept what is, the sooner you can move on.
Yeah, if you move on, it's better.
That's why I have the ability to process things faster than many people think is healthy. Because I work on acceptance. Acceptance is so powerful. Acceptance is underrated.
I admire that about you because I don't have that.
Mm.
I'm struggling with that.
Mm.
I fight, I hang on, I drag, I try and try in all aspects. Mm. It's very rare where I make a quick decision and abrupt.
But even within acceptance, you're still going through certain emotions.
Yeah,
So what's also key is to identify those emotions. Be honest about those emotions. Because sometimes we're in denial, but we're in denial about being in denial.
Mm-mm.
You see? So the sooner you can, one, accept and then identify what exactly it is you're going through so you can deal with those emotions.
One of the things that I do easy is failure.
Mm.
I don't delay there.
Yes.
Once I've realized I failed in doing something.
So you concede?
I concede, then I move to the alternative or look for corrective measures. That I do easily.
Mm.
Hey, but relationships.
Yeah, but conceding is acceptance in a way, though.
Yeah.
So what's the problem?
But that's easy for me.
You must concede she's gone. Or concede that you messed up. Then you can sooner forgive yourself, be accountable to yourself, and work on moving forward. You see, because if you don't do that, the next relationship is going to suffer the exact same thing. You see, because you're bringing the same baggage.
Let's go back to what were you asking about?
And that was our breakaway segment, The Politics of Relationships and Heartache. We'll be back with more next week. Immigration after the deadline. June 30 came and went.
Yes.
Government said the deadline was fake, then removed 53,000 people in a month. Who's running immigration policy the way things are going?
You know, Fresh, it for me, it looks like the government had lost control. And look, thanks as a South African citizen and resident and a civil servant in the immigration field and border management field, I honestly want to look at what transpired outside the box.
Mm.
And I must not be boxed into it and say, let us be honest as a nation. If these people that are sometimes being called vigilantes, that are being called civil society activists, whatever, the March on March and the other, I always forget the other group of the gentlemen from KZN, the Jacintas and the Operation Dodolas, if they did not, and even other normal civil servants, because we saw what happened, this thing for me, it became a success.
Mm.
It was well organized, there was a lot of discipline. And it was a success. Why do I call it a success? Not because there were people marching on the street.
Mm.
That's not how I measure it.
Mm.
That thousands of people marched and they are saying it's going to continue every other Thursday.
I think they said the last Thursday of the month.
Yes, it's going to continue. I'm not using that as a barometer or as a measuring instrument. My measure is, did their allegations, their protest, and their laments, were they lies?
Mm.
Are we not having thousands, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of illegal immigrants in the country? It has exposed the government.
Mm.
It has exposed the truth. How it came, who brought it up, should not be an issue.
So,
if there is a leaking part of the roof in the house, whether the leak was caused by construction or wear and tear or what, it's immaterial.
We are all getting wet.
We are all getting wet and we are in this house and this thing is impacting on us one way or the other. You understand? So I think they've exposed the government big time. Mm. And the government, as always, they reacted. Remember the government from the IMC, Interministerial Committee, a few weeks before this 30th of June deadline.
Mm.
And they were being called names. But it became truthful. I've been working in government for 30 years. I've worked in border management. I've worked in immigration and consular. I never imagined. The one that shocked me is the number of Malawians in South Africa. That's shocking. If you tell me about Basotho and Zimbabweans, and I'm not talking about illegal, I'm talking general.
Njay, the community.
Njay, the community. I mean, we grew up with people from Mozambique because of the 80s war there. Mm. They started families. They never left. I was shocked with Malawians.
Mm.
You know, those hundreds of thousands. And then it went on to do what again? It went to also expose this protest. African governments or states, Ghana, Nigeria, all of them, including some political parties in the Kingdom of Lesotho, criticizing and attacking South Africa for not protecting their citizens against the so-called vigilantes or March on March and other organizations.
Mm.
You can't protect your own citizens. You expect another state to protect them just because they are in that state illegally, as a matter of fact. Now, some even go to an extent of asking the Republic of South Africa. Remember, they were in denial before.
Yes.
To say there's no illegal citizens. When those own citizens stood up and said, no, I'm in South Africa illegally.
Mm.
Another thing that I've picked up about the reports of those who have been taken out. This is something very critical to mention. Majority of the people that have been deported through this process, majority of them, it's not because their permits expired or their visas. It's because they came illegal. You know, there's a difference.
They don't even have a passport stamp that expired.
Yes. Mm. You know, there's a difference between somebody who came here with a visitor's visa and they overstayed. And then somebody who crossed the river or the fence. Majority of these people, they came here illegally.
Sure.
From all over. Some overstayed, some permits expired, some came with student visas. And then I know somebody from Mozambique who called me personally. We are friends. And she said to me, you know, but I'm very upset with the people of your country. And I treated you nice when you are here. I welcomed you when you lived in Mozambique. And she says to me, my daughter studied in Durban, graduated, got a job, rented an apartment, bought anything. Why was she pushed out and all her goods are left behind? And I said, I don't know the story. I can't comment.
Yes.
But I don't think that's what happened. I think she feared and she ran away.
Mm.
I was not in a position to say to that lady, why did your daughter stay with a study permit and started working and building life?
Mm.
Why didn't she apply for a work permit?
Mm.
You know, if I was in a position of authority.
As one should.
As one should. But this has created serious chaos, both domestically and internationally. It has exposed how African governments, they are failing to take care of their own citizens, and they want to put the burden on another state.
And, you know, I get it. And it's unfortunate that there are also people who are here legitimately earning an honest living that have suffered at the hands of the lawless elements that chose to hijack the thing.
Yes, yes.
When the thing was about, if you don't have papers, you're breaking the laws of the land. And I don't want to say I am sorry and I apologize that there are people who bore consequences despite having been here illegally.
Yeah.
Or legally.
But
you can't make those people the story when majority stood up and said, I don't have papers.
Yes.
And I want to go home.
Yes.
Because it's at that stage, I expect you to start also being accountable and saying, I'm sorry that there are so many of my citizens there that have broken
the law
of the country. How can we work together to do the thing?
Mm-hmm.
Because now you're going to say, yes, there might be however many incidences where someone who had papers was attacked or intimidated.
Yes.
And they left. And that is unfortunate.
Mm.
But you can't turn that into the story when the bigger story is, why have so many of your people left your country without papers to enter another country without papers?
Yeah.
And you're not willing, just at the very least, at an Ubuntu level, to say, I'm sorry that there's been lawlessness at the hands of some of our people. How do we deal with this together, and move forward? Because that's how you build.
That's how diplomacy works.
Instead, you want to take the rogue elements that, yes, would have happened and make those the story. That is not the story.
And credit to a number of foreign nationals in South Africa that I've seen coming up. Quite a few came up and said, I'm a Nigerian or I'm a Zimbabwean. I'm in South Africa legally. I've got documents and I'm going to rise and say, honestly speaking, my fellow countrymen and women are doing wrong here and they are soiling our name. Those of us who came here legitimately and legally. And this immigration...
And that is what the story should be.
Should be, yes.
Instead, we want to redirect the narrative. When the bigger issue here, when the bigger issue here is lawlessness, yes, on the account of the people who are here illegally and those that chose to target and victimize people who are here legitimately, because even that is a law and order issue.
It's a law and order issue, and that's why the Interministerial Committee was very open to say they are not going to allow any South African citizen to take the law into their own hands. And look, Fresh, there's something simmering in the country, and I must really applaud the organizers of March and March and all other people for making sure that, you know, mainly with those thousands of marchers in almost all provinces, there was discipline.
Yes.
There was very little skirmishes with the police. There was discipline. We didn't see people being necklaced or being beaten up except in one few instances, and the police acted because there were arrests. Also, about 900 arrests, and I hope they go through normal prosecuting process. But the South African government should learn out of this. You know, letting things go for many years, you're creating a very wrong impression. For example, some of this, about 513, and that's the figure I got this by the end of this week, that it's about 513 Malawian nationals who were queuing outside the refugee center in Ethekwini City in KwaZulu-Natal. And because this process has now been delayed, and everybody was being moved from as far as Cape Town to near Bay Bridge to Messina, because that's the most part used for exit, the Bay Bridge. There's a good center that was created by the government there that costed almost R500,000. And I said, now, not R500,000, because of additional personnel, accommodation in tents, ablution facilities, and all those things to process them, including the movement of with buses from whatever destination in the Republic into that center. Now, these people in KZN, guess what they are saying to the government? There's an organization called, run by some Mr. Govinda, and it's called Siafana Sonke or something like that. And they are requesting the government that they don't want to go anymore. They want the government to reintegrate them back. Now, these people came forward and said, I'm illegal here. I've been illegal for 15, 20 years in South Africa. I'm leaving. Now the process of being moved out is happening. And now they say to the government, I've been sitting at this camp for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And sleeping outside and all that. I don't want to leave anymore. I want to be reintegrated back into the society. Can you see the burden that it places on the South African government? Especially after the chairperson of the Interministerial Committee, the Minister of Justice, Kubai, said that they're even going to cut the cost towards, because South Africa has been carrying the burden of moving others. And, they can't afford it anymore.
And she shouldn't have to carry the burden.
They shouldn't have to carry the burden. Their own government was supposed to do like the way Nigeria and Ghana did. But this also, you know, when I look at the numbers, it's a small number of the people who have actually left the country.
And unfortunately, you also need to understand that if you've been in a country illegally and you're about to be repatriated, as is the case, your fingerprints must still be checked. Your biometrics should still be checked against the database of a possible crime that might have been committed.
Yes.
So it can't just be that I want to go home, so we're going to let you go home.
Yeah, it can't be like that.
Unfortunately.
But it's also helping, you know what I'm saying, to law-abiding people from all over the continent or the world. If there's a process that aids you, that may even protect you for your own good, if you know you did nothing wrong, abide to that process.
Take the process.
Take the process it may protect you. I always make an example, although it was abused, about, you know, when you go into estates, what do you call them? These housing estates.
Yes.
These days, they actually even take your photo. They want your driver. In the past, yesteryear, they used to have a book at the gate, yes, and you fill it up and you sign.
Yes.
Do you know that at some stage I was entering an estate, over 20 years back, fresh, with a friend. A crime was committed somewhere, and he was alleged to have been there. Guess what was the evidence that this guy presented in court that he was not there? It was, and because I was driving,
the logbook.
It was the logbook. And I should have signed, but I was driving a left-hand drive, and he was a passenger. I said, just sign, man. And because he wrote the correct information and the signature, and there were no cameras there.
He had an alibi.
That logbook saved him to say, but he was not there, despite me saying that I was with him. The logbook supported, you know, my testimony. And it's very important to stick to the law, because if you are a law-abiding person. But there was also talks of, why is this focused on Africans? We have spoken about it. It's not focused on Africans. It's easy to demand the African people, because they are living and they are intertwined in the societies, in townships and villages and farms, and it's them who are working for factories and restaurants and all that. While the other people, like Bangladeshis, if somebody asks me, I had a meeting with the people who own spaza shops in Soweto. They formed a committee. And they have taken over those spaza shops that were owned by foreign nationals generally. Majority of the so-called spaza shops owned by foreign nationals in the townships. If you look at it, it's not Zimbabweans. It's mainly Somalians and Pakistanis and Bangladesh. Sure. So it depends what impact on the protesters and the communities. Somebody who's running a restaurant in the middle of Sanchin and is a foreign national is less likely to be seen as a foreign national taking business from poor people, because where he's operating from,
yes,
is not poor, hungry, frustrated people. And I just think the South African government, through Minister Lamola, in international forums, they should cut out this narrative that South Africans are xenophobic and this is xenophobia. We should deal with this very harshly, to dispel the rumor that this is xenophobia.
Yes.
And once the protesters, and I'm not, you know, in asking anybody to do that, they must start questioning other things, the Chinatowns, the China malls, the Chinese nationals who are in this country, legally or illegally, and all other nations.
Yes.
Then, you know, even Europeans who are here illegally, especially in the city of Cape Town, in the Western Cape, it will be interesting for that to be noted, so that it's not limited to African people only. But the government must come to the party. The people have committed or have done an uprising. It is how the government responds to that uprising. We're in a democratic dispensation. The apartheid government would have put bullets on our heads or locked us up for an uprising. The democratic government can't do that, but they must do the right thing.
Foreign destabilization campaign. Let's talk about that, because there's word that there's also a third foreign hand.
Yes, yes.
That is pouring petrol on the thing.
Yeah, look, fresh, there's been questioned, and I tried so much to avoid reading or involving myself into that.
Yes.
Who is funding Jacinta Ngovese Zuma? Who is funding Operation Dudula, led by Zandile when she was still there?
Yes.
Who's funding whom? I have said from the very beginning, it is impossible to can run such a campaign without a budget. My concern, it will not be who is funding them. My concern, it will be, what are the interests of the funders? What do the funders want to achieve out of this? Because once you are a foreign organization and you support a cause of domestic people, what is your interest? And let's flip the coin and go to the opposite side. The international organizations that are funding, what do you call them, these so-called foundations,
NGOs
and all that, what are their interests to can fund NGOs that are protecting illegality in the country, whatever reason, and taking the government to court over and over? What are the interests? What do they want to achieve? I think in this instance, It is business people against business people. And I'll tell you why is my thinking like that.
Mm.
Majority of foreign nationals that I'm aware of, especially from Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Lesotho, maybe Malawi, let me stick to those.
Mm.
And I'm basing it on my work experience.
Yes, sir.
They are cheap labor
mm.
to the capitalist market,
mm.
whether it's the restaurant, whether it's the farms, whether it's the factories.
Mm.
There is cheap labor that business owners are using them. And what does this business owner who has cheap labor do? Then you've got an advantage over a citizen or a businessman who's running a legitimate business.
Yes, whose overheads are now more because
is paying taxes.
So they can't compete with you.
And I'm suspecting that the legitimate business owners, whether they are foreign or domestic, are the ones who are funding these people.
Okay.
Because they can't compete with those who are conducting illegitimate business.
Sure.
And when you look at big conglomerates, when you look, and I don't want to mention shops, but when you look at farming, and the farming one, I'll talk more of it because I worked a lot on cross-border movements with the farming communities, mainly cheap labor, unregistered foreign nationals. So those people are innocent. Those people came here to look for greener pastures.
Mm.
The problem becomes the employer. Whether it's in Africa, how many times did the police raid factories of whatever sort in South Africa, and they found people without papers who are foreign? So I think it's the legitimate business owners who are paying taxes, whether they are foreign. Most of investors in South Africa are foreign. Very few have capital to can run big businesses. And it's cheaper for them. It was cheaper for those abusing and exploiting foreign labor, illegal labor.
Mm.
It was cheaper for them to continue doing that. And I think it's a battle of the turf.
Mm.
You know, of who can do what. Then you know that you are Mr. X and you can't fight Mr. Z. I'm therefore going to look for somebody who is actually aggrieved of this situation.
Yes.
Who is the aggrieved person? Is the person who says, I can do that farm work. I can work, or my child can work in that restaurant as a waiter and earn the minimum salary of 4,300 rands. But my child is not working. I'm therefore going to connive or work with this funder to make sure that we create an opportunity. And I think that's what happened.
In fact, Jacinta Ngobese Zuma refuted the claims of foreign funding. She rubbished the allegations that her movement is funded by Israel, saying that they are funded by donations and well-wishers.
Yeah.
And the South African Zionist Federation's Craig Pantanowitz urged cabinet ministers to either provide the evidence or retract the suggestions that Israel is linked to anti-immigration unrest in the country.
Look, I wonder if Israel will do that when there's so many Israelis or Jewish people of descent in South Africa.
Mm.
Whether legal or illegal, I don't know.
Mm.
But there's so many of them. Why would you find immigration processes? But, you know, there's an element that, and it's adopted from politics.
Mm.
The words like, and it's something that's been used like a third force, Israel this, Israel that, Israel this, Israel that. And it's very quick for people who grew up in the liberation struggle, especially PAC, ANC, AZAPO, for their people, ministers, to say counter-revolutionaries.
Mm.
So because of our historical background, that were supported by Russia and other African states and or the Soviet Union and Cuba and all that.
The Red Danger.
Yes.
Mm.
Once you associate yourself these days with those who were seen to be pro-apartheid, you are counter-revolutionary.
Mm.
And people use that word loosely and easily. It's very easy for ministers or people in government to stand up and accuse civilians or civic organizations that are coming out that you are being used.
Or that you don't have the agency.
Yeah.
Or the capacity.
Yes. You understand? As if people are not
capable. Labor to fail.
Yeah, labor to fail. That's why Fikile Mbalula once said, who is this Jacinta or what can she do? I wouldn't use my energy and focus on that. Because even you as government, you are funded by foreign agencies. The IMF is giving South African loans. The World Bank is giving South Africa loans. Now we just got loan from France for the city of Joburg. What are we saying about that? Why are we not calling the city of Joburg, counter-revolutionaries for taking money from the French, who are actually exploiters. We have seen what France has done to West Africa. Now they've been chased out of Northwest Africa.
Out of Sahel.
Yes, in the Sahel region. And now they are looking for new people to fund. Why are they funding us? As a politician, I would not focus my energies on who's funding who. I will look at the interest. If there's intelligence interest that says this is dangerous, they want to destabilize the government, it's another issue. But at the moment, I've said at the beginning, it has become truth and open that we have an immigration crisis in South Africa.
And June 30 proved that.
It proved. It proved. I mean, this ministerial committee is there. It proved. There's evidence to that. There's evidence that there are people who have been having fake IDs, fake passports. Mm. 3 days ago, a Malawian citizen was arrested for producing fake asylum papers, fake this, and IDs and passports. And it's a problem that we should be dealing with. And part of it, and I actually will repeat that the majority of the problem is not because we don't have the policies, but it is corruption and lawlessness that is caused by us as officials, and lack of law enforcement that the government has neglected. Let me tell you what happened during the course of this week. And also, this was brought in by this March on March. Do you know there was a court order for a building in Joburg that was pushed by Action SA for quite a long time? There's a court order that the court has given the city of Joburg to all the unsafe buildings, the destruction and the false advertising, hijacked buildings, to destroy them or to remove people out of them. When the city of Joburg, led by the mayor, Dada Morero, because he's on the streets these days than in the office,
yes,
to implement, they gave them 21 days. The city gave them 2 months to pack and leave those buildings. The people did not leave. Mostly it's foreign nationals. There are South Africans in some of those hijacked buildings. When they went to evict them, and to enforce a court order against, what is that, the Marble Towers, you know, old iconic building of Joburg, they found that actually Marble Towers says, we can't comply because the city, you let people to come and build structures inside the building. So,
there's a little town in the building.
Inside the building. And now what are we seeing? Guess what happened? On Wednesday evening, the people who were given by the court 21 days, the city became lenient and gave them 2 months, 60 days. Wednesday evening, they went to court on an urgent application. She said, oh, stop, you can't take us out, you can't demolish. The same court that had issued an order granted them an urgent leave to appeal the execution of the primary order. Do you see what's going on? The government is being pushed to the corner, and this is a local government. They went to court to get an eviction order. The court granted it with time and fair. Now, instead of implementing the eviction order, the people ran to the same court or another court, but it's a court of law, and say, no, no, you can't evict us. Let's talk first. And the court gave them an ear. Somebody may say that's democracy. That's how it works.
I had Zilikasi wa Africa, an investigative journalist extraordinaire, on the show yesterday. And he was talking about the fact that, unfortunately, if we don't close the tap at the source that is enabling all of this, it'll never stop. As long as people know that it's easy to get into the country, they'll continue coming. If people know that it's easy to come into the country and stay in the country because nothing's going to happen to you, they'll continue coming. If people know that Butsang sells an ID and a passport for 5,000 rand and I can get away with it, it'll continue to happen.
Yeah.
So until we nip the thing in the bud at source, people will continue do this.
Yes. And Fresh, you know my stance on corruption and maladministration. Guys, I've been in the public service almost 8 years of my life. And unfortunately or fortunately, working in that field, whether as a diplomat, immigration counselor, or as a border official, the problem starts with us. Civil servants, politicians, and our courts. That's where the problem is. Because if we were all, or at least the majority of us, were ethical, were uncorruptible, wouldn't be sitting with this magnitude of a problem. This thing happened everywhere in the world. You find border officials corrupt. Mm. You find border officials, you know, being slippery and let a person go in and bribery and all over the world.
Mm.
But the magnitude and the volumes of people who have come into South Africa illegally due to civil servants, due to corruption, due to politicians, and all those things, it's a very serious problem. And that's why, and I get surprised when I look at politicians today being indefensive.
Mm.
The politicians are defending some of these things. No, you can't do this. You know, international relations, we must not be seen as being xenophobic and all that. Don't use those to defend.
Yes.
Stand, have a position like other countries are doing. I listened to President Mnangagwa.
Mm.
I don't know if you saw the interview when he was asked. He had a press conference with all journalists.
Was it the one where our people are welcome home?
Yes. Mm. And then the part where when he was asked by a lady, so Mr. President, is Zimbabwe ready to receive this? He said, it's their home.
Mm.
But he missed the question. The question was, what are they going to do in their hundreds or tens of thousands when they came? He said, they've got families.
Mm.
They must go back to their villages. We'll transport them home.
Mm.
And then the follow-up question was, they don't have work. They don't have food. Zimbabwe is struggling economically. He said, well, they will have to adapt to what those who stayed have been going through.
Mm.
You know, if I was a citizen, I would say, this president doesn't give a damn. Doesn't give a damn. It's a crisis.
Yeah, come home and survive like everyone else.
Come home and survive like everybody else.
Mm.
But they want to make demands to South Africa. Lesotho has issued an official statement to say the burden it has put on them for the people who came back. It's a lot. About 50,000 people are, it's a lot for Lesotho.
Mm.
Who are now, you know, idling and don't have, remember majority of them would have been gardeners and domestic workers who are fearing and they decided, let me leave.
But you see, the challenge also then to a lot of our African neighbors is that can you have systems in place that when a citizen says, I need a passport or I need to renew my passport, it can happen and be expedited timeously. Because the minute you fix some of those administrative bungles and bottlenecks, then the sooner you can legalize your citizens' travel.
And you see, it's easier. Look, I know, for example, with Basotho, I don't say it's bad, but for example, South Africa used to be in the same situation. In Lesotho, you can wait up to 6 months to get a passport.
Mm.
Up to.
Mm.
And as while other countries like South Africa issues a passport in a week now, they must improve on their systems.
Mm.
Serve your citizens and your nationals.
Sure.
That's the second part is to create enabling environments for the economy. Because these people are pumping money back home.
Mm.
I wrote on my Facebook page fresh, you know, in concluding with this matter, I wrote a piece and some people didn't like, they were like, but this is not nice. I'm like, but it's the truth. Let me bring you and the viewers to this. Let me use the Somalis.
Mm.
We know that there is a war in Somalia. It has been happening for many years.
Mm.
We know there's a it's also religious war and it's an economic war.
Mm.
It's a fact.
Mm.
We know that a lot of Somalis and Ethiopians, they've been exiled or self-exiled to first Kenya because it's immediate neighboring, to some extent Tanzania, then us. Now, I want somebody to tell me, and I was asking hard questions. If you are a refugee, or an asylum seeker, you are running away from a war, you just picked up maybe your baby and your blanket and you run to South Africa. I don't know how do you run after 7 countries that you jump, but you arrive in South Africa. How on earth has anybody, and I was writing and questioning the intelligence and immigration officials, how on earth do we wake up as a nation and we have Somalians who are well organized in the country to an extent that they, in inverted commas, legitimately or correctly run spaza shops or businesses and they outbuy or outclass South Africans? Where do they get capital from? You are running away. You had nothing. Where do you get capital from to can start a spaza shop in Mutlaken Randfontein that even outsmart, outplace, and outclasses the shops and the spazas that were owned by locals?
Maybe our sense of community and working together and harambeing
yes,
is better than most.
Okay. Now, I agree with you, because that has been the talk, to say they buy bulk, they call gang funding or something like that. They go together while South Africans were hands, passers or shops as individuals. My question remains, where did you get the capital from? Even if you are 10 and you came together, how are you becoming an astute businessman, even if it's small business, person in a foreign country where you came, you said, I have nothing. Where did we get something? And these are the things that our intelligence community must start looking at. If 10 Somalis arrived here at Bait Bridge, like it has happened before, or people from Bangladesh or Pakistan, remember the 25 Afghans, they came here as asylum seekers. They had nothing. They didn't have a place to sleep. We are supposed to investigate as a nation. How did they then wake up after a month and they can have one spaza shop, second, third, fourth? Who is funding that? Where is the capital coming from?
Is it not coming from those that have been here already?
Like I said, it needs an investigation.
Because if you're running a corporacy or corporation, isn't that how corporations are built?
That's how corporations work, but that's how corporations work legally.
10 build 2, then the 12 build 3, and then the 15 build 5, and then the 20 build 10, and so on and so forth.
And for me, Flash, it shows that they are smart, they are well-organized people, they are hard workers, and they sacrifice. But you can't clap hands for illegality. For example, where did you get the permit or the license to run a spaza shop? Because you need a permit and a license. And I say, now, we know that in terms of, you know, health regulations in South Africa, you are not supposed to sleep in your shop and bath there and use it as toilet. But they're doing that. Should we just say, bas sokola, we can let that go. We cannot run a nation like that. We have to start fixing these things now, including our own people who lease their premises and licenses to foreign nationals without checking if they're here legal or not. So we must also take a responsibility and start with us as a nation.
I know, for instance, in the US, if Botsang asks me for a job, I can go into a database and type his name out, and it'll show me his entire criminal history and a record. And maybe we need to have a database such as that.
We do have the integrated justice system.
Yeah, where you can vet people and automatically know exactly what you're getting yourself into.
No, we have that, our integrated justice system.
But do people know to use it, though?
No. And let me tell you, even those, the little that were trained and know how to use it, because it's linking Home Affairs, justice, and the police.
Is it easy for the public to access?
It's not easy for the public to access that. But those who can access them, officials, and that's also where the problem lies. They get bribed. They get corrupted. You understand?
Hence I'm saying, some of these things should be a Google search away. That does Botsang have a criminal record? And it comes up.
Well, remember, with Minister of Justice wanted to publicize a criminal record for sex offenders.
Oh, yes.
You remember? Yes. And they can't because the Bill of Rights and Popi. You understand? So that's the challenge. We also have that problem to say, if we want to put, and this is a typical example of what you are saying, that if I want to rent my backyard room, if I could have access to do a police clearance for a certain individual, I don't, because Popia or the Popi Act, as well as the Bill of Rights, does not allow.
Yeah.
They need to protect them.
Because, yeah, a system like that would even be able to tell you that is Botsang in the country legally or not?
Yes.
Is Botsang on the visitor's permit? What's Botsang's status in the country?
But, you know, first we can talk about this all later, but the country needs an overhaul of that.
We're out of time, but I don't know if we have time for this story. But also, I don't know if I should be asking you about this story, because Action SA is a player in the story. President Ramaphosa's court bid to halt his impeachment. President Ramaphosa spent 2 days in the Western Cape High Court arguing that facing his own parliament would humiliate him. One of the judges even asked, but Madiba stood trial, why can't you?
I was listening to that. I laughed when those judges... look, Fresh.
So obviously on the opposing side of that was the committee, ATM, EFF, and MK all opposing, while Speaker Didiza is abiding. and the DA accuses her of clearing the president's path. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
As you said, I'm a bit conflicted because actually...
Hence, I don't know if I should be asking you about
but
this.
But generally, I want to respond to just one part. Yes. I expected this to go that route. We spoke about it, I think, the last show we had. But generally, I want to focus on one part of it, the humiliation part. The president is arguing that this may impact on his integrity if it goes through, and then the damage will be done if the court clears him before or after, then the damage will be done. I disagree with the president.
In fact, Dalimpofu said, if you've done no wrong, then you have nothing to worry about.
Remember when this committee was formed, the impeachment process committee, I said it is actually a good platform for the president to clear his name. Because it is not going to sit to impeach him to look whether there's an impeachable offense. So if he's clean, that's the best committee to use. But fresh, as that judge, what do they call it in court? The statement in passing, because that's what the judge was saying. The statement in passing, I forgot the Latin term, was saying, if Madiba, and guess what happened? The lawyer, the senior counsel who represented President Ramaphosa is actually the same counsel who represented President Mandela.
Oh, wow.
And the judge was saying, but it was you who brought this. You allowed Mandela to stand before the court, and he didn't worry about his integrity and image building. But and for me, there's no such. Right? President Ramaphosa is using a very vague argument, especially that the Constitutional Court has ruled that this committee was going to do its job. But also, wasn't the damage done or image damage done when SARS Customs, when the Reserve Bank, they said those dollars were not declared? Was the damage not done that time? They don't have any records of those dollars declared. Was the damage not done? I vividly recall one of the very first platforms where President Ramaphosa spoke about this, that there was money in the safe, there was money in the fridges, there was money in the mattress and the sofas, there was too much money. You know where he was? He was addressing a Limpopo ANC workshop or sitting. The damage was done that time when the president conceded to those things. I don't think there's more damage to his persona beyond what has happened, you know, at that stage than now. Now he's actually should be taking advantage of this process to clear his name instead of trying to fight the process. It is his legal right. We should always say it. President Zuma set a trend in this country that you can run a case for 20 years. It is his legal right. But as the president who came with a card of ethics, integrity, no corruption, what, we are holding President Ramaphosa answerable because of the cut he gave us when he took office first time during the Tumamina process.
Yeah.
And that's why people are questioning whether it was his private money and what. We have spoken about this before. President Ramaphosa had used state resources, General Ruoto was his bodyguard, to investigate this. President Ramaphosa never opened a case at Bela Bela police station. People are forgetting that. Until after 2 years, until after Mr. Fraser went to open a case against them, it was 2 years after. So those things already questions the integrity of the president. To say, oh, only after Fraser exposes you, you run to open a case. So if Fraser did not do this, you would have kept quiet about this whole thing. My concern is not President Ramaphosa's money, but there's evidence fresh during the ongoing trial of the alleged thugs or thieves. There's evidence that now has come out in court. It's not Botsan saying it. It's not the media. It's not allegations. That, and I like the way lawyers write. They don't say the money that the three had, generally. It was more than $580,000 converted to rand. They're not saying that. They're saying, counting and looking at their financial transactions after the theft. You see where courts and law becomes critical.
In fact,
after the theft,
their accounts moved over 15 million rand.
Yes.
But only 8.7 was reported as stolen.
Yes. So So this is evidence before the court or before the nation.
Maybe they had money in their accounts already.
No, but listen to my weight. The evidence before the court in Bila Bila or in the docket says after the theft.
Mm.
So it means they are calculating what was moving in out. They are not saying it's from President Ramaphosa. It could have been from other thugs.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, yeah, maybe that.
Maybe that cash somewhere.
A family trust fund.
Yeah. So it is upon the honors of the state to prove that.
Mm.
But there's wrongdoing fresh. Money came, and I'll stand by that one.
Mm.
You know, money came into the country, not recorded anywhere. The buffaloes are still sitting in Bela Bela if they're still alive.
Mm.
Mustafa has moved away from Sudan. He's somewhere in what do you call that country for rich people in Dubai now.
Mm.
And so there's quite a lot that will happen in this case. If President Ramaphosa is genuinely keen on this, if I was him, I would run to make this thing end quickly.
Mm.
Let it go to court. Let evidence court. Let Mustafa be called. How did he get the money? And we can't blame President Ramaphosa that Mustafa brought money to the country. Please, we can't do that.
Mm.
But we must know what happened from the time Mustafa walked into the Bela Bela farm on Christmas Eve. As a nation, the president owes us that it's his private farm, but he ceased to be a private person when he took an oath of office. He belongs to us as citizens now. So your private life, like I've lost my private life partially now.
Yes.
I was told I was out with gents after healing and I was out drinking. They're like, hey, wait, hey, you must stop celebrating for Argentina here. As if you are not running for it, we'll take you videos and send them to him and Mashab. Like, you must behave. You can't behave like the normal, but I'm like last time. I'm in a Shebin.
With your people.
With my people.
With the electorate.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Fresh. I think, look, I think next week we will have the judgment.
Sure.
We'll hear. It's going to be a very interesting judgment.
Mm. But like we said, just for disclosure purposes, Botsang is a member of Action SA.
And running for office.
And running for office in the city of Johannesburg. So just let the record show.
Yes. That's why we'll talk lesser and lesser about Action SA in future.
Mm. But you're still talking about the others, you see.
No, And
the question is going to be, so what happens when there's an Action SA transgression? Will you talk about that?
Yeah, hey, I want that one. I'm telling you, I will not hide it. I'm telling all Action SA MPs, MPLs, councillors, members, general.
That you're watching them.
That if anything they do wrongly, any slight, and it's the policy of the organization, I will be the first one to go public with it.
Mm.
I don't want to be associated with criminality and fraud and corruption. I don't want my name to be dragged into that.
Mm.
We are not immune as an organization to that. And as individuals have their own weaknesses, but I will not shy to talk about it. And in this instance, we are talking about the parliamentary committee. We're talking about President Ramaphosa.
Mm.
We're not talking about political parties.
Sure.
That's one of the things that I'll be engaging more on current affairs and what affects us as a nation and geopolitics, not on how this political party is behaving, because then it will be unfair.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're out of time.
Thank you, Fresh.
Welcome back. We missed you.
Thanks.
We're glad you're on the mend. Where do we find you on social media?
As usual, let's continue the engagement and discussion on +27837887 on WhatsApp and at Botsang M on all social media handles.
Mm.
And I promised you last week when you came to see me, I'll stop breaking my legs and ribs.
No, I was telling Botsang, you can't just be falling for no reason. I mean, you're in your lower 50s, but you're doing stuff of 100-year-olds.
Maybe I'm tired and I've lived my life so much. Yeah, but you're fresh. Being injured at an old age, it's, no.
Yeah, because even the healing is slower.
Yeah, I'm still carrying stuff that are helping me in the car, but I think also staying at home and relaxing is helping a lot.
Sure.
Although political activity is not helping, but no, it's not.
You said Tumamina, so we will.
No.
Yeah.
But thank you, Fresh, and thanks to the followers and the viewers. And again, once more, apologies for it was beyond me, and it happens to all of us.
Sure.
We get sick, we get injured.
Mm.
Sometimes we take breaks and leave.
Absolutely. And we all need those breaks.
Yes.
Thank you for watching. Thank you for engaging. Thanks for all of the comments, for liking, for subscribing, and most importantly, sharing the links with family members and friends and even your adversaries so that we can keep the conversation going, especially in the comments right here on YouTube. This has been another installment of Wow What a Week, hashtag Polytrix, coming to you from Discover TV in Four Ways, Johannesburg. Discover TV, let them be your stage. We're part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email us on waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Our executive producer is Keletso Modisa-Keng, and all of our videography, cinematography is done by Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works. If you're having an event, an occasion, music video, whatever it is that you want to turn into a movie for life, Pezulu Works will do all of that for you. From myself and Botsang, until next week. Have a wow week in spite of yourselves. We're out of here.